Right, so Keir Starmer has just volunteered Britain for permanent irrelevance. Donald Trump removed Nicolas Maduro from Venezuela by force, and the British Prime Minister responded by waiting for Trump's press conference to offer a response to it, as if the law only switches on once Washington has finished talking. That pause wasn't prudence, it was submission. It was performed slowly and blatantly in public by a man who keeps advertising himself as a former human rights lawyer, yet can watch international law get dumped without so much as a squeak. And this isn't a one-off lapse, and it isn't about a bad day at the office either. We've all seen this before. Law shouted from the rooftops when it's safe. Law whispered into a cushion when it points at allies. And suddenly, obsession with process when naming the breach might cost something. Keir Starmer recognised what had happened, recognised who had done it, and chose to look away. It's his profession, after all. How could he not? No other conclusion can possibly make sense, can it? So now, he owns the consequence for his own weakness. And every word he says about international law carries the same problem going forwards. No one believes he'll use it, but it actually bites. Right, so Keir Starmer watched Donald Trump remove Nicolas Maduro from power in Venezuela, and he did nothing that could plausibly be called independent judgment. He didn't object, he didn't name the breach, he did not even pretend to assess legality on his own terms, did he? He waited publicly for Trump's press conference, which is to say he waited for the perpetrator to decide how the act should be described before deciding whether the law still applied. That choice wasn't confusion, it wasn't caution, it was deference. And it fixed everything that followed. Starmer didn't need clarification. A sitting head of state has been forcibly removed by a foreign power, kidnapped, sovereignty had been overridden, and control had shifted by force. A lawyer does not need a press podium to recognise that. A former director of public prosecutions does not need a briefing to understand what international law does with that kind of act. Keir Starmer understood it immediately, which is precisely why he stalled. He wasn't deciding what had happened, he was deciding whether he was willing to contradict the power that had done it, and he decided that he wasn't. When he eventually spoke, the words confirmed the decision that had already been taken. He reframed the act as a long-desired transition, dismissed the target as illegitimate, invoked international law without applying it, and aligned the British government with the United States in managing the outcome. That sequence matters a lot. Delay first, alignment second. By the time the statement arrived, the position had been locked in, and the law had just been reduced to a little bit of decoration on the top. And this is where the damage becomes permanent, because Starmer didn't just stay quiet, he explained his quiet too. Waiting for Trump's press conference wasn't a throwaway remark to a reporter. It was an admission that judgment flowed upward, not outward. That Britain's role was to adjust to American framing rather than assert any of its own. A shiver looking for a spine. Starmer has no defence here grounded in certainty. He's shown repeatedly that uncertainty does not slow him down when Western power is not implicated. He had instant moral certainty when Israel cut off food and water to Gaza, and he said so to LBC without hesitation. He had instant legal certainty when Russia crossed Ukraine's border, and he reached immediately for international law and sovereignty. He had instant punitive certainty when Palestine Action disrupted arms infrastructure with a pot of paint, and he supported the full weight of the state coming down on them. The paralysis appears only when the United States is the actor, when Donald Trump is the actor, and Britain is expected to follow. Well, that selectivity isn't a flaw in communication, it's Keir Starmer's governing method. International law is treated as binding when it disciplines adversaries and optional when it restrains allies. But that method only works while it remains implicit. The moment it's exposed, as it has clearly been now, the authority it relies on collapses, because law that applies only when it's convenient is not the law at all. Ukraine and Russia versus Israel and Palestine have exposed it repeatedly for so long, and now we can add the US and Venezuela to that picture of patheticness. Starmer's supporters might call this realism, but realism is not the same thing as abdication. Realism would still involve drawing some lines, accepting friction. What Starmer demonstrated instead was anticipatory compliance. He waited to see what the centre of power would say, deferring to Trump the perpetrator, and then placed Britain safely inside that frame so nothing would need to be walked back on later. That avoided some short-term discomfort for him and carries a price that can't be deferred. Captain Hindsight getting his ducks in a row, you might say. Once a Prime Minister shows that he will not apply the law to the most powerful ally, though, every future appeal to that law becomes optional in the eyes of everyone else. When Starmer condemns a breach tomorrow, the answer's already written. You didn't mean it when it mattered. So why should we listen to you now? You mean it when it was safe. That's what you're about. That doesn't weaken an argument, it just empties it. Starmer, the empty suit. And this is why the damage is institutional too. Starmer's removed himself from the category of leaders whose objections carry weight because they're consistent. So from this point on, he can still speak, he can say what he likes. He can't compel anybody to listen to him, though. He can't compel attention. Nobody cares what he says. Why should we? His authority's gone. In global politics, predictability without independence produces irrelevance. Allies do not consult partners who never disagree. They inform them after decisions are made, if at all. By waiting and aligning, Starmer didn't secure influence. He signalled that Britain could be bypassed without risk. The defence that Britain must stay close to Washington collapses under its own weight too. Staying close only matters if closeness can be converted into some sort of leverage. We get something out of it. Here, there's none. The United States acted. Britain waited. Britain then aligned. And Britain still played no role in shaping events at all. That's not a special relationship. It's a dependency arrangement with good branding. Starmer's government reinforced a choice rather than correcting it. Ministers echoed the same language, repeating the same euphemisms and invoked international law in the same empty way, treating the outcome as settled and the only remaining task as managing transition. The machinery of state didn't drift into that position. It executed it. And this matches because it tells you how this government understands law. Law's not a constraint on power. It's a tool for managing perception once power's already decided. When that's the operating assumption, the content of the law becomes secondary to the identity of the actor. The first consequence is that Starmer can no longer credibly object when another state uses the same logic now. When force is justified as stability, when removal is reframed as transition, when illegality is washed away with language about outcomes, Starmer has already accepted the template. If he objects next time, he will be objecting selectively, and it's going to be pointed out. The second consequence is that Britain's claim to be an independent legal actor collapses. A country that will not name breaches by allies is not enforcing norms. It's smoothing over violations so the system can keep moving in the desired way. That's not leadership, that's maintenance of a corrupt system. And the third consequence lands at home, because when people see a government that applies the law ruthlessly to protesters and indulgently to states, the lesson doesn't get missed there either. Starmer's handling of Palestine action makes that hierarchy explicit. Direct action that disrupts arms supply chains triggers instant condemnation and heavy policing. State violence that destabilizes an entire state triggers delay, euphemism, and quiet alignment. So the contrast tells you what law is for in this government's worldview. Deference to power, punching down with authoritarian impunity with the other hand. Once that becomes clear, blatantly obvious as I think it is by now, the domestic implications are unavoidable. A government that will not defend international law when it inconveniences allies will not defend domestic law when it inconveniences authority. The instinct is the same. There's no path back from that that relies on better messaging. The problem is not that Starmer explained himself badly, it's that he explained himself accurately. Waiting for Trump's press conference was the truth of the relationship stated plainly, and once stated, it can't be disguised again as prudence or diplomacy. Starmer was not ambushed by these events. He was presented with a test and he failed it in full view of the country. His weakness on display was not momentary. It's structural because it revealed how decisions are made when law and power collide. Power won openly and the law was told to wait its turn. And that's what has now been fixed. From this point on, Keir Starmer cannot plausibly claim to be a guardian of a rules-based order. He can still use the phrase as much as he likes, but nobody will believe it. And nobody will care to listen to him either. Weakness chosen at this level doesn't fade with the news cycle. It hardens into expectation. Allies expect compliance. Adversaries expect inconsistency. We, the public, will expect that inconsistency too. So the lesson absorbed is a very simple one. Brutally so. Protest gets punished. Allies get indulged. Those expectations shape every interaction that follows. Starmer's problem now is not that critics are calling him weak. It's that power has taken him at his word. And when a Prime Minister demonstrates that he will wait for permission from another leader before applying the law here, or internationally, that behaviour becomes part of the operating environment. It gets factored in every time somebody else hears him. And this is why the idea that this was a tactical pause collapses on contact with reality. Tactical pauses are followed by leverage. Nothing of the sort happened here. The pause was followed by alignment, which meant the pause was the leverage. The waiting was the signal. Starmer's defenders like to say that diplomacy happens behind the scenes. But that argument only works when there's evidence of pressure or consequence. And there isn't any. There's no objection, no distancing, no conditionality. He waited for Trump to speak first, and then he spoke after, and not before. The British government behaved as if the deed were already done and its role was simply to adjust to it. The deeper issue is that Keir Starmer did not misread this moment. He read it accurately, and he still chose compliance. He understood that opposing the United States would carry cost, and he decided that paying that cost was not part of his conception of leadership. And this is where the legal background stops being an asset and starts being an indictment. A non-lawyer might plausibly hide behind confusion. They still wouldn't be much of a leader. But a human rights lawyer, they can't do that. Starmer knows exactly what international law does with forcible regime change. Attempts at it, anyway. When someone with that knowledge chooses silence, the silence isn't ignorance, it's endorsement by omission. That endorsement does not remain confined to the moment, it becomes precedent. Other states watch how breaches get handled, not what is said in abstract. They watch which breaches are named and which ones get smoothed over. When they see that allied power can override law without objection, they adjust accordingly as well. And this is how systems decay and fall apart, not through one dramatic collapse, but through selective non-enforcement that teaches everyone involved which rules are real and which ones are optional. Starmer has now participated in that teaching process, if you like. The cost is not only external, but internal too. Inside Britain, this episode confirms a pattern that's already been visible for quite some time. The powerful actors get patience and process, critics get speed and sanctions. And this is why leadership on this episode came from outside government, from people like Zach Polanski and the Green Party, who were willing to say plainly what had happened while the Prime Minister was still waiting to see if it was safe to do so. They don't hold office, they don't control the machinery of state, but they still named the breach, and that's the difference. Leadership isn't a title or a briefing slot, it's stating reality first and dealing with the cost later. Polanski said of both Starmer and Nigel Farage, as it happens on social media, that Starmer and Farage both drape themselves in flags, but once again it's really clear where their loyalty really is. It's Trump first. They will always be on the side of the super rich and powerful, no matter how heinous the crime. This is not patriotism, it's subservience. And he's not wrong, is he? Keir Starmer has now created a situation where his strongest future critics will not need to invent any arguments. They'll simply replay his own words and his own delay, his own contradictions. Waiting for Trump's press conference will follow him everywhere that this issue gets raised. There's no credible way to spin that into leadership. It's submission with a professional tone. The final consequence is the simplest one, though. When a Prime Minister shows that he will not defend law when it costs him something, he teaches everyone watching that law is optional for the powerful and compulsory for everyone else. It's not a lesson we're going to forget, is it? Starmer didn't cause the invasion of Venezuela. He didn't know anything about it, let's be honest. He did something quieter and more damaging. He showed that Britain would not stand in the way, not even verbally, and that choice removed his ability to claim that law still governs his decisions. So from here on, he can still occupy the office. He can still deliver statements. He can still condemn safe targets. What he cannot do is persuade anyone that he will apply the law when it actually constrains power. And that loss does not announce itself loudly. It settles in the back of all of our minds, and it then shapes our expectations. And it determines outcomes, such as the next time we get a vote, perhaps. For more on what Starmer is letting Trump off the hook over here, do check out more on that side of the story just in this place here. Please do also hit like, share and subscribe if you haven't done so already, so as to ensure you don't miss out on all new daily content, as well as spreading the word and helping to support the channel at the same time, which is very much appreciated. Holding power to account for ordinary working class people, and I'll hopefully catch you on the next one. Cheers, folks.